92.9 Podcasts, powered by Action 24/7. Tennessee's only local legal sports book. Bet now at action247.com.
Are convinced this was legitimately a self-defense situation? And I'm not. I mean, you're running around protest with a AR-15 style semi-automatic rifle. You're begging for trouble.
Yep.
And you're creating your own situations where you then insist you have to use self-defense. But for the sake of the conversation, and I think this is why so many people are outraged today, not because a young person got off with a self-defense defense, or at least not necessarily that, not only that. What makes this disappointing for so many people is that even if you genuinely believe this was a self-defense situation and this young person was within his legal rights to kill two people and injure another, even if you sincerely believe that, you have to also, if you're being honest with yourself, acknowledge this. If he's black, he'd be in jail for the rest of his life. There is no way a young black man could show up with an AR-15 style semi-automatic rifle at a protest, kill two people, injure another one, and be found not guilty. It would not happen in this country. That's the truth. And I wish that the people who are celebrating this could at least acknowledge that. Maybe I'll leave open the possibility that based on the laws, the way they're written, and what actually happened in Kenosha, Wisconsin, Kyle Rittenhouse deserved to be found not guilty. I'll leave that open for possibility. I wish the people who do believe that sincerely could acknowledge at least that if he were a different color, even if the facts of the case were exactly the same, he is in jail for the rest of his life, more likely shot dead by cops at the scene. And that's the problem, or at least among the problems with the justice system in this country. I don't know how many people are that outraged that Kyle Rittenhouse got off, as much as they know there ain't no way a young black guy who did the exact same thing would have been given the same verdict. Jeff Calkins up next.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parish Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
My heart to myself, drifting in and out of focus, staring into space. When I caught you noticing me, noticing you.
Thanksgiving's next week. Holiday season is more or less here. Soon enough, it's going to be one party after another in between football games, Grizz games, Tiger basketball games. You're the type of person who likes to enjoy a drink every now and then while you're hanging out with others or alone. Allow me to recommend New Amsterdam Vodka. It's a premium 80-proof vodka made from the finest quality grains, 5 times distilled for unparalleled smoothness, filtered 3 times to create a soft finish. As I'm sure you know by now, it is so smooth you can drink it straight. And I promise you, it is what I buy when I'm inside the liquor store, and that's because it's a quality vodka that's reasonably priced. They got a lot of different bottles in a liquor store. You've been, you've seen. I'm just telling you, there is no reason to spend extra money on any other brand. New Amsterdam Vodka, it's going to give you a quality vodka, and it's going to do it at a reasonable price. The best value you can find. If you're into flavored vodkas, they make a bunch of them. Watermelon, lemon, raspberry, orange, red berry, peach, pineapple, coconut. They also make a gluten-free vodka, so if you're on a gluten-free diet, that's the bottle for you. It's got a brown label. Next time you're in a bar, restaurant, or liquor store, ask for it by name. New Amsterdam Vodka. Pour your soul out. On the web, newamsterdamspirits.com. Jeff Coggins is an award-winning columnist, Daily Memphian, host of the Jeff Coggins Show, weekdays 9 to 11. Right here on 92.9 FM and ESPN, joins me every day after 5. He's here right now. Jeff Coggins, how are you?
I'm good, Gay.
You ever been on a jury?
Never have served on a jury. I've been up for jury duty, but then they always excuse me. I think I'm too good looking.
No, I think they say, so you're a Harvard graduate, and you go, yeah, and they're like, get him out of here. I mean, really, isn't it true, correct me if I'm wrong, but like, the defense always wants dumb jurors, don't they?
And yes, and then, you know, and I used to be a lawyer, and that's not good either. Like, you know, like I'm going to be some know-it-all explaining stuff to them or whatever. You know, I'm very I'm not someone anyone would want on a jury.
I want to be on a jury so bad.
I've been on a jury.
You do.
Bennett's been on a jury.
I've been on a jury.
Oh, okay, Bennett. Tell us what happened.
It was a criminal case.
Ooh, like what kind of crime? Tell us the crime.
It was a what we think it was, and this was pretty clear what it was a drug deal gone wrong.
Oh yeah.
And a guy.
I prefer my drug deals to go right.
How long were you in this? How long did they go on?
I think I had to go downtown for 4 days. Yeah, I think it was almost a week. Yeah.
And what was the guy was charged with dealing or with what was the charge?
Like so basically this guy was charged with stealing from another guy, charged with stealing his wallet and dragging him by his car. Yeah, the guy was like, basically the guy was accused of stealing another guy's wallet who was for some reason at the window of his car. And when he stole the guy's wallet, the guy tried to grab his wallet, and he dragged him with his car. Now,
the defendant was dragging the victim with the car?
Yeah.
Is that the idea?
Yes, okay. But we think that this was a drug deal gone wrong.
Yeah, like the guy's pulling out his wallet to pay
for the drugs.
To pay for the drugs, uh-huh. And the drug dealer just says, I'm going to grab the wallet and floor
and bounce
it and get out of here.
Yep.
Okay, so what are you guys...
Not a bad move, actually.
How long did you deliberate?
Not long. It was
guilty or not guilty.
Well, it was guilty. The man was found guilty. But I don't think it was like some massive charge. But it was pretty clear what happened there. Like
guilty of stealing the wallet and of some kind of assault with the car.
Yeah, I believe it was I don't think it was like assault with a deadly weapon or anything like that. But it was some form of assault that he was charged with.
And
you sent him to the hooscow.
You sent him up the river.
Let me be honest. This was years ago, and I was young. I did not have much say in the matter.
I think I would dominate the jury.
See, I just kind of set back and just
be calling people idiots on the jury.
Yeah, see, I just kind of set back and let it play out how it would, and whatever everybody else agreed with, I was like, okay, I'm with you guys.
By about 30 minutes into the jury, I'd be room.
Yeah, I'd be calling everybody stupid.
Have people like that, by the way. There are definitely people in there that want to dominate the deliberation room, and you're just like rolling your eyes like, okay.
I would dominate the jury. I would be the dominant. I'd be the foreman. Within 5 minutes, I'd have that label. I'd be the foreman. I bring this up because it was interesting as we were watching this Kyle Rittenhouse jury deliberations unfold. I saw a legal expert yesterday say they will wrap this up tomorrow. And it was like, how do you know they'll wrap this up tomorrow? And he said, because what people forget, we think of these people, they're jurors. Juror number one, juror number seven. They're humans. They're moms and dads. And it's a holiday weekend, and they want to go home this weekend, and they know tomorrow's Friday. Yep. They will wrap this up on Friday. Whether they are actually all in agreement or not, this thing will be wrapped up on Friday because they don't want to come back Thanksgiving week. They want to be done with this. They want to go home. And so the person strongly suggested, even if you've got a few people who don't feel strongly guilty or don't feel strongly not guilty, whichever way this is going, the majority is going to pull the minority to their side at some point on Friday, and that'll be the verdict that you get. And as I heard that, and it seems pretty clear that's what's happened, as I heard that, I wondered, I said, would I do that? I'd like to think I'm the type that if I thought this young person deserved to be found guilty, but the majority of the jury room was pulling me toward a not guilty verdict, I'd like to think that I would stand my ground and say, you guys can keep talking. I will never come to your side. There is no scenario where I'm letting this guy walk free. So we can hang this jury, or you guys can start listening to me. But I ain't coming to your side under any circumstances. I think I would be that way.
That's very admirable of you. that's very admirable of you. Yeah, it did not surprise me that they wrapped it up. It also did not surprise me in the least that this is the verdict that was. It's what I expected.
It is what I expected too. I feel like I could pull people my direction.
Well, how's it working with that relative of yours who's not vaccinated?
I haven't talked to him in months.
That's what I'm saying. But how's the pulling them in your direction going? Like, I do think people are susceptible to being, and they're supposed to, like, you're supposed to debate it. That's the whole point. And you're supposed to be able to, and some some lawyers like to have people who they think will pull people in their direction, you know, on there. I mean, that is, if your role on the jury is to be pulling people in your direction, that's an important role, and helping people see it a certain way. I mean, that is part of your job. So, I don't know. I've not thought about it much because I pretty much know I'm never going to be on a jury.
I want to be on a jury so bad. I wish, if you're out there and you're in charge of that kind of stuff, invite me.
Here's the thing, though, Gary. Like, I know we talk about the genius of the American legal system, right? But knowing what we know about people by what we can see on Facebook, right? Like, do you have much faith in juries?
No.
I don't know that there's a better system, though. That's the problem. Like, do you want to? Well, you could have a judge just deciding things, right? But, and that's just one person. Like, this genius of a jury of your peers is what we, you know, what our legal system is built on. And yet, fundamentally, I'm not always that impressed by my peers.
No, I'm not impressed by my peers at all.
Some of them, you know, I like the listeners to our radio show. I appreciate all y'all out there and the readers of the Daily Memphian, and most people I am, but there's a lot of peers who strike me as singularly not that with it.
Yeah, no, I'm largely unimpressed with my peers. I mean, I'm certainly impressed by some peers, but I feel like the majority of people I meet and know, and let me back that up. The majority of people I see talking amongst themselves on social media, I'm unimpressed by them.
That's, of course, it's, some of this is self-selecting. Like, whatever. Yeah, that's the problem. It is. Like, you get this group of people, and they're ordinary people, and some of them are smart, and some of them are not as smart. Like, if you're lucky enough to have Bennett on your jury, that's, you know, you got
to... I'm starting to question why I was selected for this jury.
Let's get this dumb Big Bet Bennett, put him on the jury. He'll do whatever we want him to do.
And I was wrong, by the way. The dude was found not guilty.
That's a small detail of the...
No, I was wrong, because that's what I was saying, that we thought that it was a drug deal, and so we were like, well, no one, you know, that we're not going to find the guy guilty of doing this when the other guy was just as much a part of it.
But he still did what he did. Oh, we'd argue. We would have argued. Even in the middle of a drug deal, you can't grab somebody's wallet.
If I'm out there buying drugs, I don't need to have my wallet stolen and being dragged by someone's Durango or whatever down the highway.
Yeah. Like, maybe I shouldn't be spilling all these details. Yeah. I think there's some kind of confidentiality
like
agreement
Bennett,
here.
Like, Bennett, if you're trying to sell me edibles back behind the studio and I pull out my wallet and you grab it and take off, you've committed a crime. Just because we were in a drug deal doesn't mean you didn't commit a crime.
You are allowed after the fact to talk about it, Bennett. So,
by the way,
you
guys mentioned like people getting out of it. Dude, there was this guy next to me, and literally it was an older gentleman, and they asked him one question. Because, you know, they ask the jurors questions before the defense and the prosecution ask the jurors. Okay, and this guy literally just goes, you know, any decision I make is going to be based off of the Bible. And they were like, next. Like, it was done. I was like, really? Then I had to go there for a week. So
I'm disappointed in you as a juror, Bennett.
I tried to be a stand-up juror, and it just, you know.
If somebody steals your wallet, they steal your wallet. It doesn't matter, like, well, it was in a drug deal, so it's okay to steal your wallet. No, it's still stealing somebody's wallet. It's not okay.
There's a lot of loopholes in this one.
I think there's a lot of nuance that we're probably missing.
Yeah. And but I can't remember. Like I said, I was like 20 years old.
Right. Whoever identified Bennett as someone who was just going to go along with them, like, they got him nailed at that point, you know, pretty clearly. I don't think it's that he was dim is why he was selected, but he was disinterested. I can see that that's why he was selected. Mm-hmm. Let's just go along. Let's get Bennett. Big Bet Bennett. He'll just go along with whatever the majority decides.
I would be very interested. I think I would enjoy the process of it if I had a real case.
I think you would drive people, the other jurors, crazy. Yes, you would make us have to go back downtown
like,
an extra day.
To get us away from Gary. Like, please, get us away from this guy.
Well, I would
driving everybody crazy.
I would be like, well, because I do catch people's when they contradict themselves or when they're not speaking consistently. Like, right. I catch that stuff, even in my own life.
I know. I know. Keep pointing out to Kelly all the time.
And I'm not saying it makes my life easier or better. I'm just saying I'm good at doing it. I'm not saying I would be a pleasant juror. I'm just saying I think I'd be a really good one. I'd like to try it. Like, well, I was listening to this podcast. Remember the one I told you about the little engineer or computer programmer?
Yeah,
right. And she got murdered and they arrested.
Listened to it. Okay, what's it called again?
The suspect, maybe?
My wife listened to that. She liked that
one. It was really good.
Yeah.
Okay, so this will underline the point we're making. So eventually, he is found, I think it was a hung jury, and then they had to retry him, and then he was found not guilty, the initial person they arrested. But among the reasons it was a hung jury is because one of the jurors was an old white man, and he interviewed with the podcast after the fact. He was voting guilty. And so they're talking to him and they were like, well, what did you think about this? What do you think about that? And he sort of landed on, well, from my perspective, this guy was a thug. He actually used that word. And he had some criminal stuff in his past, which is true. And I thought it was more likely that he did it than not. And if he didn't do it, well, he would still have an appeal, and that's why I voted guilty. And that is quite obviously the complete opposite approach you're supposed to take as a juror. You're not supposed to say, well, I think he probably did it. It's supposed to be beyond a reasonable doubt, not more likely than not. And I voted guilty because, well, he might not be guilty, but he can still appeal, and I'll let somebody else handle it. Like, that's not what you're supposed to do. But that's actually what this guy did, and that's terrifying. That your life is in that person's hands.
I got to tell you, I just held the phone away from my ear for that entire time because I may listen to the podcast all the way home.
Oh, God. Okay.
So I'm sitting in my car and I'm doing the radio show from here. And so I can't comment on what you just said because I had a spoiler alert. It was like flashing in my head. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
I
did hear the words hung jury, even though I was trying to not hear anything. So now a little bit of spoiler, but I don't want to hear this.
I will say that.
Bennett can comment on it.
Okay.
He's an experienced juror. I intentionally did not listen.
What do you think about that man's performance as a juror, Bennett, as a former juror yourself?
That is totally unacceptable and goes against everything the criminal justice system stands for.
What in the world? I do think that is a, I believe it's called Suspect, that is a podcast that even if you know where it's going, you would still enjoy it. I don't think I could ruin it for you. It's well done in a pretty interesting story. So anyway, there's your.
I'll tell you what I object to, though. What I particularly object to in this whole thing today is what I think is disgusting is the idea that the guy is some kind of hero. That's what I find disgusting. Like if you want to make that argument that it was self-defense, but the idea that there are people out there who are treating him like a hero, literally there's no reason to do that unless you're a racist, and zero. And so that's the part that I find particularly discouraging today as I look at the landscape.
The point I made earlier, pretty briefly, is that if you want to argue the merits of the case, that this was actually self-defense and based on the way the laws are written and what actually happened, he was quite literally exercising self-defense. Therefore, he should be found not guilty. Like, I don't believe that, but some people clearly do. I guess the jury clearly did. What bothers me most is that even if you believe that that's true, that Kyle Rittenhouse deserved to be found not guilty today, you have to know deep down, whether you're Clay Travis or anybody else, you have to know deep down, if you're being honest with yourself, if Kyle Rittenhouse was a 17-year-old black kid showing up at a protest with an AR-15-style weapon and ended up killing two protesters and injuring another one, there is no scenario where he would be found not guilty of all crimes.
And that's absolutely right.
There is no scenario. He would probably be shot dead at the scene by the cops.
Yeah.
But if he happened to live through that and was charged with murder, he would be found guilty of murder.
That's 100%, 100% true. 100% true.
And I think that
And yeah, it's you know, there is not equal justice in the law, under the law in the United States of America. There's just not. So that's what to me is disgusting about it. The people celebrating this, like, it's not. If you want to go argue the technical parts of that, that's fine. And I honestly, you know, didn't pay close enough attention to it because it was going to discourage me because I knew this is where it was going to go. But I've read enough to know that there was stuff for the defense to work with here, right? But yeah, they would have had a hell of a lot of time, hell of a hard time if it was a if Kyle were black. There's no question.
I think it what it came down to is if you got the right jurors who are preconditioned to be on your side, you were probably going to get a not guilty verdict because technically all three people were coming at him in some way.
Oh yeah, there were things to argue. There were definitely things to argue. Like the guy from the Daily Caller said, you know, that he was, you know, reaching for his gun. You know, I mean, there is definitely stuff that you could argue with here. If you're a defense attorney, you could. It did not surprise me at all that he got off here, but. But yeah, there's all kinds of things. I mean, literally, there are Congress people out there suggesting we have a day in his honor. You know, at worst, what he did was, at best, what he did was he went to a frickin' protest and you know, killed people. And maybe it was tragically mistaken. He thought he was, you know, whatever else. But there's nothing to celebrate here. Nothing to celebrate here.
It's a weird country we're operating in right now. Let me ask you this, on a lighter note, sports related. Do you hate Houston? Bennett hit me with a "I hate Houston" earlier, and I said, I don't think I've ever heard anybody say that in the Memphis market before. Bennett hates the Houston Cougars.
I don't think I hate Houston.
Yeah, I don't think I do either.
I hate Houston.
No. Well, basketball, football, is it a basketball rooted hate?
For me, it's all sports.
Bennett hates the city of Houston, the Astrodome, Travis Scott. The Rockets, the Texans.
I just think they think they're better than us.
Well, they might be.
I disagree.
What? Is that
I've been
Houston?
To Houston. That city's bland.
Well, no, like
actually, the city of Houston, I will actually say, is probably one of the better big metropolitan cities in the state of Texas.
Funny, it's to the extent that I hate Nashville, and I don't hate Nashville. But the thing that I hate Nashville about it is that Nashvillians' attitude towards Memphis. But I don't think Houston has an attitude towards Memphis.
Yeah, I don't think they even think about us.
That bothers me. All right, I want them to think about it. They do too. That's them thinking they're better than us.
By the way, this has been confirmed to me. I have a friend who recently moved to Nashville who is just struck by, independently, how much people just randomly say, "I would never live in Memphis." Like, that bothers the hell out of me. But they're not saying that in Houston.
Right. Yeah, I don't even think they're thinking about us in Houston. I think in Houston they're talking wild about Dallas. I don't think they're worried about us. And I don't mean that Houston is better than us. I just mean like Bennett was like, no, Houston thinks they're better than us.
Houston doesn't think about us one way or another. Yeah, Houston doesn't think about us.
And I was like, from an athletic department, like the Big 12 decided Houston's better than us.
Yeah. Well, the truth of the matter is like we Memphis has beaten Houston in football 5 straight years.
Yeah.
You can't even get – like, you can sometimes hate the team that beats you. Like, I always hated the Patriots, right? Why? Because they beat the hell out of us. Well, Memphis has beaten the Houston Cougars 5 straight years.
Well, I'm a Titans fan, and so obviously there's that. There's that whole history with Houston and the Titans organization.
Texans.
Yeah.
It's the Texans. It's rooted in Texans.
That's where it starts. But it really is – I mean, the basketball rivalry. Like, come on. I mean, they've – been really, really good. They're your biggest rivalry.
They have been good.
I respect Houston. I don't hate them. I respect them.
No. No respect. What about the Astros? They're cheaters.
They are cheaters.
I mean, come on.
There's no getting around that.
I don't like the Astros.
Rockets had James Harden all those years and the flopping
that
nonsense.
Didn't like them at all. But I don't hate Houston.
Yeah, I don't hate Houston either, but I will say that when we were talking about this, like, it just sort of popped up in the opening segment. I did get a handful of tweets from Memphis fans, and they were like, "Yes, I hate Houston too."
Mm-hmm.
I was like, "I didn't even know that existed." Like, I knew when I was a kid, Memphis fans hated Louisville, and then I knew hated Cincinnati, and obviously
hate UCF. People hate UCF, I think, right?
I don't know if people hate UCF here. I don't think that.
I think they do.
I don't think so. I think there's a respect there.
Really? Valley.
Yeah, especially, you know, I don't know if you saw.
Like, I don't respect UCF.
There was a couple weeks ago when Mackenzie Milton said something, and he was talking about
Everyone loves Mackenzie Milton.
Yeah, and he was talking about how, like, because they were talking about that year that they went undefeated, and he was saying the best team they played that year was Memphis, and, you know.
Yeah, well, if you want to hear Kelvin Sampson say nice things about Penny Hardaway, that's easy. Then he beats the hell out of him every time. But he always says nice things about Penny Hardaway. He'll say all these things. Oh, they're a great team. They should have been in the tournament. Like, on and on and on. But that doesn't soften your feelings towards Houston, evidently, Bennett.
Yeah, Bennett was fired
up. I don't
like
Houston.
We were talking about, like, you can only win one game tonight, the basketball game or the football game. Which one do you win? And I said the basketball game. And Bennett agreed for all of the obvious reasons. But then he went right into, I don't know, because I hate Houston. I was like, you hate Houston? Mm-hmm. When did you get this Houston hatred in your heart?
It's been there. It's been there. You're just bringing it out of me.
What a wild deal.
And it's not, by the way, that it would be so much fun, obviously, to beat Western Kentucky. You just don't want to lose that game.
You can't lose to Western Kentucky.
You can't lose it. That would be the worst thing that could happen tonight of all the various things. Would be the basketball team losing to Western Kentucky. There's no question.
That is correct. All right, Jeff Calkins, I'll talk to you on Monday.
All right, see you, man.
Bye-bye. I don't hate Houston.
I mean,
we talked about this before. I don't hate anything.
See, I do. When it comes to sports, I have hate.
I don't have any sports hate. No.
I have sports hate. I do. Houston at the top of the list, just all of their sports teams hate.
Like even the Braves. I don't hate the Braves.
Mm-hmm.
And LA's rivals. I don't hate the Braves. I don't hate anybody, anything.
Yeah,
I either like you or I don't think about you.
The NBA, it's so different because of how much overturn there is on the rosters. Like it's hard to like have a rivalry really in the NBA, like with the Grizzlies.
Like I'm like that in real life too. I mean, I have my moments, you know, where I slip a little bit. Mm-hmm. I can acknowledge that, but for the most part, I don't spend a lot of time hating people or things. I either like you. And I don't think about you. You're just not even in my world. Like every once in a while, people would be like, "So, how's so and so?" I don't know. Talk to him lately? Nope.
Like,
what are they up to? I have no idea. Like, I'm consumed with what I'm consumed with, and everything else is just noise for the most part.
Like, I'm just gonna be honest with you, and I know we got a lot of Vols fans listening, but if Memphis loses that basketball game to UT, and that's like the final time they play for a long time, that's going to ruin my week.
Well, I would like to see Memphis beat Tennessee because I'm for all things Memphis. But I don't hate Tennessee. Like, I heard John Martin, my little buddy, on a rant one day talking about it. My daughter will never go to the University of Tennessee.
Mm.
And that's fine. I don't care where his daughter goes to school. But I would never feel that way about anything when it comes to my kids or anybody else. Like, if one of my younger boys ended up at the University of Tennessee – and, you know, we decided to go to a Tennessee football game, and I decided to wear a Tennessee sweatshirt. Like, that would not be a weird thing for me. I've got a pair of Tennessee basketball shorts. I wear them sometimes.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't feel that way. Like, I acknowledge I'm in the minority. I understand I'm in the minority, mm-hmm. but I am not somebody who, I love this, so I have to hate these things. It's like, I love this, and I just focus on my love for this.
I'm really worried
about the other stuff.
I changed my mind. I'm fired up for this Memphis-Houston football game tonight.
Woo!
I'm ready to destroy them tonight on national TV.
Big Bad Bennett.
Let's go. Let's turn this season around.
Big Bad Bennett's ready to turn it.
I'm ready to become bowl eligible tonight.
Game 11's a little late to start turning a season around.
We got things at stake tonight. Let's get bowl eligible and destroy the Cougars.
Okay. Be back in a second.
What's up? Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parrish Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Off the hill with the mean view, nice house. If you look out, you can see some eagles and a few yachts.
Grizzlies won last night by 12. John Morant had 28. They're headed to Minnesota, and the initial injury report is out. It's not great, Bennett.
I saw it. What the heck?
DeAnthony Melton is out. Right. I can't say the word.
Groin?
Growing. I struggle.
Groin.
Growing. Growing.
Growing is like what my son's doing.
What's going on with DeAnthony Melton's?
His groin's injured.
Groin. I can't say it.
That is bizarre.
I struggle with it. I've been struggling with it for years.
Mm.
I try to avoid it.
Okay.
Should have just talked about Pete Davidson and Kim Kardashian holding hands or something. I didn't have to get into this injury report.
I love that story.
It's my show. I could have done whatever I wanted to do with this segment.
That instead. We could have talked about that.
Because I can say hands very clearly.
Yeah.
Perfectly, nearly every time.
Pete Davidson is a freaking star, man.
He gets it done, doesn't he?
It's unbelievable. I'm a fan, though. I'm a fan.
It's not actually unbelievable. It's very believable.
Well, he's rich and famous and funny.
Tall, skinny.
I mean, he's not good looking.
Tall, skinny goes a long ways, man. Tall, skinny, funny, wealthy, famous.
I think humor goes a long way.
Tall, skinny, funny, famous is an amazing combination. And then
I think that's true.
And then it starts to feed off itself. Like once you
no, he has a reputation about himself.
Yeah, like once you've gotten had a relationship with. Let me say that more appropriately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Ariana Grande and every other young actress that he's been with, then it starts to feed off each other. It's like, well, mm-hmm. if he was good enough for her, he must be good enough for me. And next thing you know, you're doing whatever you want to do.
A lot of people saying this is a publicity stunt. Because she wants to be, like, with this, because he's friends with Machine Gun Kelly, and who's friends with Travis Barker, and she wants to be part of the clubhouse, Kim K.
In what world does Kim Kardashian at this point in her life need to do a publicity stunt? What are we talking about?
I don't know, man. She's made a career off of it.
I think the more likely scenario is that she's going through a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
She hosted SNL. She was around this guy and found him charming and funny and attractive. And given that her husband has already been out with multiple young models, she was like, what's to stop me from hooking it with a...
It's a good point.
...good-looking guy, or at least an attractive guy, who makes me laugh, who is 13 years younger.
Also, a guy who likely is one of the only famous people that Kanye can't get under his skin. Anything Kanye says about Pete Davidson is not going to bother Pete Davidson. Like, what?
No, it would just show up on Weekend Update.
Right, exactly. Like, Pete Davidson... At that, I don't remember whose roast it was. They were freaking making fun of him because his dad died in 9/11. like he lets anything roll off his skin.
I wonder, do you have to ask permission? Do you have to ask Kanye West before you start hooking it with Kanye West's wife? I feel like you would. Maybe not any guy, but I feel like if Kanye West's wife and you are about to become a thing, I feel like you have to talk to Kanye West about that.
I don't know, man.
I feel like you owe that respect. It's Kanye West, for crying out loud.
I don't see that conversation going down. I don't think that conversation went down. I don't see it.
I think that should be a rule. If you're going to date Kanye West's wife, you got to talk to Kanye West about it first, just out of respect for one of the greatest music minds in the history of our planet. It's yay for crying out loud.
I'd love to hear that conversation.
Pete Davidson and Kanye West talking about Kim Kardashian.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd listen to that conversation. The NFL season has given us a big Week 11 divisional matchup between rivals, the Arizona Cardinals and Seattle Seahawks. FanDuel Sportsbook is about to make it even bigger because FanDuel has given new customers 30-1 odds on either team to win. That means you can win $150 on a $5 bet. The Seahawks struggling, got shut out by Green Bay, so probably lean toward Arizona. Might take the Seattle under and a Kyler Murray over passing yards. That's a same-game parlay with a nice payout. FanDuel is sports betting made simple. And they're always hooking you up with great offers. It's one of the many reasons I love playing the NFL on FanDuel. Plus, it's easy to use, safe and secure, and when you win, you'll get paid in as little as 2 hours. And if you're already a FanDuel Sportsbook user, FanDuel is hooking all customers up with $50 when you refer a friend. Plus, your friend will get $50 too. See for yourself right now why FanDuel is America's number one sportsbook. Just sign up with promo code Gary before the Cardinals take on the Seahawks, and you could win $150 on a $5 bet. Remember, promo code Gary, so they know I sent you, exclusively on the FanDuel Sportsbook app, which is official partner of Odyssey and this station. Must be 21 and present in Tennessee. New users only. $10 first deposit required. Must wager in designated offer market. Max bonus, $150. Bonus for Tennessee users fulfilled in site credit within 72 hours. Tennessee site credit expires 14 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. If you got a gambling problem, call Tennessee Red Line 1-800-889-9789. We'll be back with dinner to go. I got a Dateline preview.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parrish Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Cooper Systems in the Mount Moriah Office Park on the web, coopersystems.com. If you're the market for a computer, high-end, low-end, middle-of-the-road, desktop, notebook, tablet, get in touch with Lee and Lauren Cooper. They've been serving the Memphis area for more than three decades, and they're here for you this Christmas. Listen, it's November 19th. This ain't no joke. Christmas is going to be here before you know it. You got to shop early. You heard about these supply chain issues around the country. They haven't impacted Cooper Systems, but you don't want to take any chances. You don't want to be looking around 2 weeks before Christmas. You can't find what it is you're looking for. So get into the Mount Moriah Office Park now. Make sure you got what you want. Everybody deserves, needs, wants a new computer under the tree. Go ahead and get that done. Get it done this weekend. Get it done next week. You won't have to worry about it when the calendar flips to December. They got big brands, including Apple. You can get Apple products at Cooper Systems for a fraction of the price, about half the price that you're going to get at Apple or the big box stores. 360-9679, 360-9679. Give them a call when you need them. Cooper Systems, Mount Moriah Office Park on the web, coopersystems.com. Dinner to Go.
Dinner to Go is brought to you by Memphis Barbecue Company. It's Dinner to Go. What did we learn today?
A whole bunch of stuff, but let's get back to that injury report for the Grizzlies. We got a little sidetrack there. This is what you need to know. Sam Merrill's out. Left ankle sprain. He got hurt at the end of last night's game.
I know. That sucked. I saw it.
Yeah, he looked like he was in pain.
Yep.
Dylan Brooks is doubtful tomorrow night against Minnesota with a right hamstring soreness.
Yee.
And De'Anthony Melton is out. Tell him what his issue is, Big Bet Bennett.
He's got a groin issue.
Yep.
Yep. He's got a groin issue.
Yep. So the Grizzlies will be shorthanded in Minnesota, but they can still win, maybe.
We'll see.
We'll see.
It's tough.
We'll see.
What's the biggest game tonight? Presented by FanDuel Sportsbook.
Western Kentucky at Memphis. It's college basketball. The Tigers are ranked 11th in the country. They're 3-0, 14.5-point favorites tonight. What are you thinking, Big Bet Bennett?
Yeah,
big number. It's a big number.
No, I like it, though. Tigers covered in the last one, and it was a pretty big number. I think they do again in this one just because there's guys on that team that lost to that Western Kentucky team last year. I know it's a different team, but I don't think they'll just overlook this team. I think they know if we play bad that we're going to lose to this team. So I think they come out ready tonight and beat the crap out of Western Kentucky.
Big Bet Bennett has predicted that the crap will be beaten out of the Hilltoppers. Tip off at 7 o'clock. You can stream it on ESPN+.
What should I watch on TV?
Got a brand new Dateline NBC 2-hour special. Starts at 8 o'clock. I'm going to preview it and then I'm going to spoil
it.
Okay,
let's go.
I'm going to preview it and build suspense.
Okay.
Then I'm going to tell you everything about it so you don't have to watch it tonight.
I'm ready.
It's a good one.
Is it?
I think so.
Okay.
Stacey Ann Kells was a 19-year-old hotel receptionist in a suburb 30 miles outside of Chicago. She was a pretty young woman, a big personality, who met a local cop named Drew Peterson and quickly fell in love. To some, it was odd, considering Drew was 30 years older than Stacey, just 1 year short of 50. But Stacy didn't care about that. Oh, no. From Stacy's perspective, she'd met the man of her dreams, the love of her life. Age was just a number. If she'd fallen in love with a much older widower, she'd fallen in love with a much older widower. The heart loves what it loves. Fast forward 3 years after marriage to October 2007, and Stacy went to the movies one night with her sister, Cassandra. Before going home, Stacy told her sister, she said, I'll call you in the morning. But that call, well, that call never came. So Cassandra called Stacy straight to voicemail. And very quickly, a search for Stacy was underway. Drew Peterson, he told police that Stacy called him one night, said she was leaving him for another man. He said he never heard from her again. But did that explain why nobody could get in touch with Stacy? Or was the more likely situation something more than just a runaway wife? Was the more likely situation a murdered mother of four? That's tonight on Dateline.
I mean, I don't think we have. I'm going to say no Keith tonight.
You're correct. No Keith tonight.
No Keith, okay.
Underrated Natalie Morales.
Oh, what's up, Natalie? Okay, I
underrated
like Natalie.
Yep. Natalie Morales, like Natalie, is handling the reporting duties tonight.
You know, I'm going to say that Drew Peterson kidnapped and murdered just because he could not accept. Now, he's a widower, you said, correct? You threw that out there. Wonder what happened with the other. Wonder what happened with the wife that died.
I'm about to tell you.
Oh, well, it appears then that maybe Drew Peterson just likes murdering his wives.
He's a killer.
He likes murdering his wives.
This guy's a killer.
I knew it.
Let me tell you about this guy.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Okay, so he's a cop. He was married four times.
Oh, God.
Stacey was
the
fourth.
There's your sign right there.
Stacey was the fourth.
Yep.
Well, Kim Kardashian's going to end up being married four times. She's not going to kill anybody.
I guess that's true.
She's not going to kill anybody,
yeah.
Bennett. Don't label all four-time.
Okay. Apologies.
Okay, it's accepted. So his third wife was this woman named Kathleen Savio. They divorced in 2003. And then Kathleen was found dead in her bathtub in 2004. It was initially ruled an accidental drowning by a coroner's jury. What in the world is a coroner's
what
jury?
What is going on with the juries
lately? They have
lately?
A coroner's jury.
My goodness.
Right? So I guess they get a group of people and they sit around and talk about it and they decide what the cause of death was. I think we should let one person be in the side of that. The coroner.
The coroner sounds good
why,
to me.
I don't know why we need a coroner's jury. So guess who was on the coroner's jury? A police officer who personally knew Drew Peterson and assured the other people on the coroner's jury, Drew's a good guy. He would never hurt his wife.
Well, that seems like a conflict of interest.
So
GP.
They said, okay, if Drew's a good guy, he'd never hurt his wife. This must be an accidental drowning. I don't know whether Drew would actually hurt his wife. At this point, we didn't know. But phone records show that between 2002 and 2004, police were called to the house 18 different times for a domestic dispute.
All right. Come on.
Either way, that just stays an accidental drowning. Drew, in the meantime, he's met Stacy, marries her.
Mm-hmm.
She's now his fourth wife. He has two more kids with her. She adopts the other two kids. She's a mother of four. In 2007, Stacy goes missing. And after this happens, authorities are like, all right.
What's going on here? Yeah.
So they decide to exhume Kathleen's body and do a forensic examination. And you're not going to believe what they found when they did this.
She didn't drown.
It concluded that she died of drowning after a struggle. Post-mortem photos showed extensive bruising and scraping on her back, torso, and face, plus a large unexplained gash in her head. So Drew was eventually charged with murder, eventually convicted of murder, and sentenced to 38 years in prison after, among other things, Stacy's pastor finally came forward and said Stacy once told him she knew Drew had killed Kathleen and that she was afraid of her husband.
Good God.
Drew's alibi, when the cops were like, Kathleen's dead, where were you on the night of whatever?
Uh-huh.
I was with my wife, Stacy. But he wasn't. She lied to be his alibi.
Man.
He got the sense, the prevailing thought is that Drew reached a point where he thought Stacy was maybe going to tell police, I lied when I told you he was with me that night. He was not.
My goodness.
So he killed her to keep her quiet. Now, Stacy's body has never been found, not to this day. But neighbors said they saw Drew and another man carry a 55-gallon barrel from the house 2 days after Stacy went missing.
Dude.
Check this out. There's a guy named Thomas Morphy. It's Drew's stepbrother. He helped carry a plastic container from the home to Drew's SUV shortly after the disappearance. Swore he didn't know anything about what was in it. It was just like, hey, help me carry this to the car. Okay, sure. Once he realized, Thomas, that he might have unknowingly removed Stacy's remains from the house, killed himself 2 days later.
What?
Drew Peterson will be interviewed from prison tonight by Natalie Morales.
I got to see this interview. This man has caused chaos.
Because he still claims his innocence.
Okay. Yeah, right,
no,
Drew.
No, you're a killer, Drew.
You're an absolute killer.
You're a killer.
The evidence is there, brother.
The evidence is overwhelming. Drew Peterson is a killer. That's on Dateline tonight.
Is there anything I need to make sure I read?
Yeah, I got to finish a Hubert Davis column in advance of North Carolina's game with Purdue tomorrow. There's nothing I wish more than that I didn't have to do that as soon as the show's over, but I got to. And then eventually I'll tweet it, and then you should read it at CBSSports.com.
What's on tap next week?
Well, it's Thanksgiving week.
It's Thanksgiving week.
So we'll be looking back at Tiger football, looking back at Tiger basketball. No matter what happens tonight, big game next week with Virginia Tech.